Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Rugby Wrap-Up. I'm Matt McCarthy at the Studio 34 of the Fantasy Sports Network, and I have the pleasure of being here with some rugby legends here, in some already made and some in the making, Mr. Bruce McLean, Mr. Stephen Lewis, and Mr. James Kennedy. You might be wondering who the Sam Hill James Kennedy is. You don't know him yet, but you're going to know him, and you're going to know him specifically right after this webcast. We're going to start with Mr. Kennedy, and the topic is going to be professional rugby here in the United States. There's a lot of rumors floating around. Bruce and Steve are going to chime in accordingly, but Bruce is here, and Steve's here for a different topic, and that'll be kind of like USA Rugby and the politics of rugby in the United States right now. I'm going to ask you fellas to be wary of the sound on the table. So, James Kennedy, you're a self-made man in construction. You're a funny talker from Ireland. You and your 19 siblings have been playing rugby since you were knee high to a grasshopper.
Badly.
You have used your own money in support of rugby in the United States in a lot of different capacities. Play Rugby USA, sponsor for the high school national championships in Kansas City. And now you're kind of in the center of things with professional rugby in the United States. Care to comment, Mr. Kennedy?
There's some I can say and some I can't say, but
you're still going to have to come closer to the mic.
I can talk a wee bit about the market and that USA is ready for professional rugby.
There's some things that you can and cannot say, you were trying to get the Pro 12 franchise here in New York City. Is that accurate?
Yes.
This is a sports talk show. Yeah, does he get this over here?
Okay, that was that is
and it, you got to talk to the mic.
That is accurate. That is definitely accurate. It didn't work out. The timelines were off. I like Pro 12. I like what they do. I like their product. But what they wanted in New York and the timeline they wanted, it wasn't possible. But it definitely
field venue and training facilities.
Yeah,
and
getting all that off the ground. We had the financing, we had the partnerships in play, we had the stadium plans, etc. It just, the timeline wouldn't work, and we walked away at a certain point, very, very late in the negotiations. We're still behind Pro 12. We'll still support them if they go to Philly or wherever they end up. But it definitely got me focused on professional.
So, I'm sorry, are you saying that they're going to Philly? Is this breaking news here, Mr. Kennedy?
I can confirm that.
You're going to have to, again, speak closer to the mic.
Actually, I don't know where they're going or if they're going to any place, but there's a lot of rumors out there.
I don't believe you. I've been hanging out with you for a while now, and I don't believe you for a second that you don't know where they're going. All right, let's ease off that, though, okay?
Yeah.
MLR.
What's that?
That's the Major League Rugby outfit that's being set up here in the United States, supposedly kicking off in April of 2018, maybe a little bit later than that, after the sanctioning from Pro Rugby wears out. What do you have to say about the MLR thing?
I think it's a nice idea. I think from what I heard on the street that they're modest and more realistic about their expectations as far as rugby in America. Worried about the geography of it, you know, the spread of the clubs as being professional, attempts of professional along that pathway over the past that have failed. So yeah, I like the idea of it.
And are you going to be involved in the MLR at any particular franchise, maybe a New York franchise, East Coast franchise?
I like the idea of that, too.
You like the idea of being involved?
Yeah.
You're going to have to get close. It's the talking too much bell, but now it's the too far away from the mic bell as well.
Okay, I just moved the mic.
Yeah. all right. So it's going to go from the too far from the mic bell to the talking too much bell to my constituents on the right here who have no problem around a microphone. Bruce, I want to start with you. I know that we didn't schedule to talk about pro rugby with you here, but I think you know a thing or two about rugby in the United States. What do you think of the whole MLR thing, the Pro 12 thing, and some quick words on Pro Rugby USA that Steve used to be affiliated with?
Well, I think that what Steve was involved in, the Pro Rugby USA, was very difficult for them. A, it was a circumstance where the owner really didn't know a whole lot about rugby, and then B, it was very difficult to get as many fans as were needed to be able to cover those contracts. So it was always going to be a long-term investment, and I don't think that necessarily was on board with the ownership and all that kind of stuff. As far as MLR, I think that's going to be a very similar. I don't think there's as much of a money outlay in terms of how to make it work, but in order to get the fans there, it takes a lot of fans who are dedicated to coming, and they got to come at different times. So I'm a little bit skeptical about that, and I hope it goes extremely well. I've always felt that the Pro 12 or a Celtic League kind of thing, where there was an American team in the Celtic League, was the only way that we could make money in America in professional rugby, and I'm hoping that that's what works out well. But I'm hoping they all work out well, and pro rugby seems to be dead in the water at this point. MLR seems to be a real go, and I think there's a lot of interest in almost making it more of a go in different MLR style things going in different regions. So hopefully it all works out, and that would be fantastic. It would be great for the game.
Steve, we've spoken a lot with you about pro rugby USA, but MLR Pro 12, because there's real rumblings that there might be a Pro 12 franchise landed here in the United States for the start of the 2018-2019 season. Would it conflict with an MLR setup?
I don't think so necessarily. I could see a scenario where a Pro 12 team could operate in the same market as a MLR team. I think they're two different beasts. I think what we're going to remember is if you're talking professional rugby, i.e. people getting paid, it's ultimately a business. Pro rugby failed because it wasn't run like a business, amongst other things. The MLR looks to be better set up as a business, so should work. Pro 12, track record, are they making money? Who knows? But ultimately, we've got to face this realization. It's putting bumps on seats, as Bruce said, but it's making money. What works, what doesn't work.
And speaking of bumps on seats, we're going to take a quick break and come back with some more bumps on our seats.
Bums.
I was talking bumps. I got some bumps on my seats, and that's what we're going to talk about after this. Quick break.
I'm Michael Checker, coach of the Wallabies. I'm watching the Rugby Wrap-Up.
That was a good one, guys. You got to hear the off-camera stuff with this group. They are just a barrel of monkeys. But we're back here at the Fantasy Sports Network, Studio 34, for Rugby Wrap-Up. Matt McCarthy, Bruce McLean, Steve Lewis, and James Kennedy. We're talking a little bit about bumps on our seats and pro rugby. Steve, we had left off with you, and you were talking about the comparison of MLR and Pro 12. So if there's a Pro 12 franchise in Philadelphia, and then to get an East Coast presence in the MLR, is Philadelphia, for instance, going to be able to hold up and carry a Pro 12 and an MLR team? James?
No. I think Philly would be a great city for a Pro 12 team, because it's a very sports-oriented city. It's a smaller market than New York. It won't get lost in the market. And I don't think they need, in that scenario, an MLR team as well. I think there's DC, New York, Ontario, Boston. There's plenty of other metro areas on the East Coast that can carry MLR and possibly feed into a Philly-based Pro 12 team.
So you're saying no, Bruce? Can a town like an East Coast town, East Coast city, carry both?
I don't think Philadelphia can.
No, yeah. You said, can Philly can?
I did. I'm changing. This is my show, and I'm changing it up here.
Okay. I'm just saying. Different question.
It'd be very difficult for somebody to carry two. It doesn't matter, even if it's in New York, which is about as large a city and rugby-friendly as you could hope for. I don't think they can carry it either. It'd be a very big struggle. I would think the Pro 12 team would kind of want to have exclusive rights. They can't have that, but I think they would want to have something like that.
Steve?
Back to bums and seats. I mean, which would succeed? You know, a Pro 12 team presumably would have significantly more big-name players, international players, what have you. So they'd win that battle.
Well, there's the next question. What are they talking about having? Are they talking about having, like you just saw with the NHL. I don't know if you guys are up on that, but there's a Las Vegas franchise, and they just had a draft where players were taken from each squad. The Rangers lost a couple of good players. You know, different teams lose players. Would they do a similar thing for a franchise here in the United States, or are they moving a franchise? Are they disbanding it, like an Italian franchise, for that matter? Do you know? Are you up to speed on any of this stuff?
I can say that there's a lot of talk about maybe cutting the Italian teams down to one. I think that's not fair on the Italian franchises. I think they weren't given a fair shot. But as far as, well, how would you populate a team on the East Coast? I think you would look to indigenous talent supplemented by some squad players from the Pro 12 franchise that exists, supplemented by legacy players from the Southern Hemisphere.
Supplemented by any number of good young South African players that want to get out of South Africa.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
So I mean, that wouldn't be the issue populating a Pro 12 team. I think if you had any kind of artificial requirements vis-a-vis how many American players you needed or anything like that, you have to let market forces dictate, ultimately.
Well, my question really isn't, I'm not concerned about them having the ability to populate a team. I'm just wondering how they're going to populate it. Are they going to have it, you know, are they going to take from other squads?
I would doubt that very much.
I doubt that they'll take from other squads.
I don't think they need to. I think there's more players out there than there is teams to facilitate those players.
I think they would take from, I think they would take as many American players as they can possibly get who are very good, and then they're going to need to, obviously South Africa is the one place, especially with the racial quotas and things, that they're going to have to take some players from South Africa who are very capable players who aren't going to get a chance to play in other franchises and possibly at the Springbok level. And we can get some fantastically talented people as well as island players and players of that nature. Populating it isn't going to be hard. And, and the Pro 12 teams will not allow them to start grabbing people from their own team.
All right. So which setup is going to be here first on the East Coast? Is it going to be a Pro 12 or an MLR team?
I actually don't know. I straight up don't know.
The hell are you doing here?
I mean,
you're supposed to know all this stuff.
It's a toss-up right now. I mean, you're not going to see an MLR team 2018. Or are you going to see a Pro 12 team 2018? I hope not, because it takes time to build a team. You know, and if someone rushes into this just to claim their, plant their flag, so to speak, they could fail. And you only get one shot. You know, if you put a team out
there...
So
you're saying Pro 12 shouldn't plant one team here? They should plant more than one?
Well, they should take their time. They should take the time and build the team, because you only get one shot at the market. And, you know, look at New York Cosmos, for example, a soccer team. I don't know if we can talk about soccer here, but they rushed to market and bought out
soccer. We're not talking about soccer here, no. All right.
I'm just saying. You guys.
Well,
I don't think it's relevant. It's not a race to the East Coast. It's a race to get the best product on the field.
You put together a whole league of players. Do you think 2018-19 season for Pro 12 is too soon for a squad here in the United States?
Again, I don't think it's too difficult to put together a squad of players. I just think there's a whole load of other stuff around a team that you have to get right, which require...
So that's a no?
No. To me, it's community activation, right? I mean, some of the things Pro did was, right, I signed 180 guys, 15 coaches, we played a 12-game season, and it got done in under 3 months. So that part was okay. But what didn't happen? Was there any community activation? No. Was there any relationships built with communities? No. So there's other things rather than just naming 28 players or a squad of 38 players.
All right. So, Bruce, if you're looking at coaching for a Pro 12 team, because you've had quite a bit of coaching experience, where are you getting your coach? Do you have to spend a big amount of money to get a coach to come to the United States? And you're not going to use a coach in the United States, or you got to use a name?
I don't think you need to use a name. I think that a lot of times when they use these name coaches, it's not a successful product. It's not successful. You need someone who cares. 90% of winning in games is about caring and about putting people together and about, as Steve was saying, you have to build community outreach. You have to have a whole lot of things going on. You can have a name coach. Graham Henry can coach the Eagles. He ain't going to win. He can coach it with Wayne Smith and Steve Hansen. They're still not going to win. Given the resources and given what's going on now, they would still lose by 70 points to the All Blacks, just as they did in that game in Chicago. So coaching isn't the main answer. Coaching is a massively important part of it, and I think that you can have a team of people that work well together. Crusaders did that. No-name coaches, Scott Robertson, no-name coach, with Jace Ryan and one of the young Leon McDonald, and they do it. You know why? Because he went with people he trusted, and that's the whole key to winning and coaching. Go with the people you trust. Going with names and all this other nonsense doesn't work, never has, never will.
Speaking of never working, some of my outs are horrible on this show, so we'll be right back after this.
Anytime's a good time for a Wolfpack Lager. Wolfpack Lager. Now that's a converted try.
And we're back. Gentlemen, we're picking up with Bruce McLean because we're going to segue into the segment that I wanted to talk to him about. And since the four of us are here together, we can all eavesdrop on the conversation. But Bruce, you are a man that has his hand, his imprint, his influence all over rugby in the United States. Coaching at the Athletic Club. Now you're taking over. You've taken over the Iona program and put them on the map. And you've got a lot to say. A lot of people hear your thoughts. Some wonder if you're bonkers. Some completely agree with you. Some you stir debate with. I want to ask you, Bruce McLean, tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., if you are the chairman of the board of directors for USA Rugby, what are your three first orders of business?
My first order of business would be to be very honest with the American rugby playing and rugby coaching and volunteer public about the state of the game in America and the financial state of the game. My second order of business would be board of directors at major nonprofits, which is what USA Rugby is. We'll talk about RIM in another show or maybe later. They give money. So as a board of director and the chairman of the board, I would say I'm going to give $500,000 a year, and that's what I'm going to do. And everybody else who's going to be on the board would give $100,000 a year minimum, or you're off the board.
Do you think that's a realistic ask for an organization like that? It's not being the board of directors of the New York Giants.
No, it's not. New York Giants are a for-profit organization, but it's not being the board of directors of the American Cancer Society.
That was
either
a test.
Or a college or something like that. But if you want to get on the board of directors or the board of trustees of a college, you want to get on the board of trustees of the American Cancer Society, you give money. Our board of directors haven't done anything to develop the game in America. They haven't done anything to – they haven't given sweat equity or anything else. And it was put in these positions of massive power to transfer the commercial viability of the commercial rights to American rugby to a private entity.
You're referring to RIM.
A crony capitalist thing, which is, it's not capitalism, it's cronyism, it's fascism. But that all being said, so.
Go ahead. I just wanted to hit the bell on fascism. Anytime we have fascism mentioned on the show, you're going to get a bell.
Fascism. RIM, fascism. But anyway, I would say that would be my number one order of business, would be to have the board of directors give money. Secondly, I would get back to the basics of what USA Rugby should be focusing on. USA Rugby should focus on men's and women's national teams, men's and women's sevens national teams, and under 20s. That is what they should focus on. Everything else is superfluous. That's what we're there for, and that's what we should be focusing our energies, efforts, and everything we do on. The rest of everything else can be done through the entrepreneurial efforts of the volunteer base of American Rugby, which is an amazing group of people, of which we see people here, four people right now. And there's thousands of others who have created massive youth programs in Union, New Jersey, massive youth programs in Morris, New Jersey, Play Rugby USA, massive youth programs, everything that's been done with the high school national championships, the CRCs, everything that's been done with the Varsity Cup, everything's been done in D1A recently. And so
Done by volunteers.
All done. It's the Super League. All of that was done outside of the purvey of anything. People do things because it matters to them. And that's rugby matters to all of us, which is a great camaraderie.
Hold on. You're still the CEO. So
Yeah.
All right. So what you're saying is you want to empower these entrepreneurs, these volunteers by taking away
the bureaucracy. I want to take away all the bureaucracy that causes people to not want to be involved, it drives them crazy that they get these mandates that are given from on high, quote unquote, and why do they even have to listen to them? In many cases, it doesn't do anyone any good, themselves or the programs that they're running.
So as the chairman of the board of directors of USA Rugby, you are, in theory, beholden to the Congress. And it just so happens that we have a Congress member here, a relatively, we call you a freshman congressman?
You could.
Steve? So, Steve, you're on the Congress. Explain just briefly, at the risk of being hit with the bell, what the makeup of the Congress is.
Okay, so the Congress is comprised of 46 people. So there's the first reason it doesn't work. Drawing from different parts, different constituencies. So 10 international athletes, 16 from the club game, 10 from high school, and 10 from youth, I believe. That's the breakdown. And Congress is you know, charged with this oversight of the board function, also with the approval of dues increases, and also with the composition of the board. And having been on it for about 4 months, I can, you know, confidently say it doesn't work. The last Congress,
you're in big trouble, Mister.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Nobody pays me to be on Congress, so I'm spending my own time, my own money on airfares and time. So I feel quite strongly about it. I feel Congress is a failed organization. I feel, despite many well-intentioned people on it, it's consumed by apathy. Not one international athlete ever gets on a phone call. Two of them show up now and again, and that speaks to the failure of the governance structure.
Yeah.
So the board is most responsible for the current situation we're in. Congress is a weakly charged organization which is failing to perform even that minimal role. So we have problems structurally with the leadership of rugby in this country.
All right, we're going to take another break, but Steve, I want you to address how some people out there think that the USA Rugby Congress is nothing more than an incapable of action, kick the can down the road body comprised of people that like getting together at Eagles matches and slapping each other on the back. And we'll be back after this.
Hi, I'm Joe Schmidt. You're watching Rugby Wrap-Up.
Oh, yeah. Some of these breaks are just hilarious, right? Oh, man. You got to come by and watch the show from the outside, the bar here, folks, because it is hilarious what goes on. The hijinks during our breaks. But, Steve,
some
we're going to get
boobs.
Back to that quote. What's that?
What's that? Some big boobs walking by as they wave.
You talking about your boobs?
Mine are big, but not as big as the ones I saw.
Yeah, there's some scenery here, ladies and gentlemen. Not that I've noticed because I'm a happily married man. Steve, we left.
Doctors are important. Doctors create those.
Doctors create those. Whatever he meant by that, I don't know. Steve, we left the break. We left you to contemplate the question of some people out there that say that the USA Rugby Congress is nothing more than an incapable of action, kick the can down the road body comprised of people that like to get together at Eagles matches and slap each other on the back.
Sorry, Matt, that's a very accurate quote. Who said that? Just say who said that.
I put together a bunch of different quotes and made one general quote. Hubert Chekhov came up with that quote. He's a Russian guy. Steve?
I think it's a little harsh. I think there's 46 people there. I mean, they're passionate about rugby and they're well-intentioned. And I think everyone gets on Congress with the correct idea. And I think they're very active. Many of them are very, very active within perhaps the constituency that they represent. However, as a member of Congress, you are charged with a wider, broader power. You're responsible for taking a wider look at the game. And I think in that aspect, Congress fails. One of the major responsibilities of Congress is to oversee the board. And the failure of the board,
that guy,
the failure of Congress to hold the board accountable for what has been an inglorious failure in the last 2 years between the creation of RIM, the flawed concept that is the Rugby Channel, the disaster that the pro rugby sanction was, and financial mismanagement.
All right, but there are those out there that will say those things are actually successes of the board, that we've never had a rugby channel, that we never had a for-profit arm. You know, that they can be viewed as positives.
The rugby channel is a flawed concept. I mean, there's no content. So unless it moves to some kind of educational model, I think its days are numbered. And
it's got some content.
Yeah. What? What game of rugby are you going to pay to watch on a rugby channel?
Well, I have really short arms and I don't make any money covering rugby, so that's a whole different conversation. I don't think I'm the sample.
Fair enough. But financial mismanagement, right? We're a non-profit, and we're $1.5 million, $800,000 over budget on high performance. How is that possible?
That's not good. That's not good. And that's why...
And there's no accountability. That's what I'm driving at, and that's where Congress's role should be. We had a vote of confidence in Austin at a Congress meeting, and the vote was 38 members in favor of the board's performance and one against.
So how does it change?
No clues.
How does it change?
Well, I think you're seeing, we're now another 6 months down the road, and many of the things that were promised by the board to Congress have not come to fruition. So how many times, how many chances did turkeys get a vote for Christmas?
What are examples of what's been promised by the board to the Congress that hasn't come to fruition?
Quarterly financial reporting. They did hire a new CFO, so they said, well, until he gets his feet under the desk. That didn't happen. We were promised high-performance audits, and I know Dan Payne has been working on that one, but it hasn't happened. A high-performance audit, incidentally, needs to be independent, and it needs to be external. Otherwise, it's not worth the paper.
Because high-performance was what? How much over budget?
Well, it was somewhere in the figure of $800,000. And, you know, that's unconscionable. So that's the first. It's what I'm interested in, so I'm probably more passionate about high performance than other things. But to me, it's half the deficit, and it's our national teams. It's the short window of the game. It's why we don't have a professional domestic club structure. I mean, there's a whole lot of things stem from that. And you're only going to get coherent, clear answers by having someone outside who is not conflicted and not too passionate, like me, I'd clearly not be the person, but to come in objectively and tell us what we're good at, what we're not good at, what we should be doing, what might work.
Well said from our friend the Champagne Socialist, which has me labeled as a neocon by a comment on Twitter, by the way, or somewhere in the hemisphere. But James, what is your take on all this?
I mean, I think...
Into the microphone.
I think that I agree with everything that Steve says, but... It doesn't. The higher echelons of USA Rugby doesn't honestly reflect the hard work that's been put in at the grassroots level. You know, people like Mark Griffin are out there putting rugby balls in kids' hands every weekend, every day. You know, out in Jersey, up in Westchester, and all across America, Ohio, any place I've been, kids are playing the game. High schools are playing the game. You know.
I know you keep nagging me to do the 51.
Yeah,
clubs,
51
right?
clubs in New York, and we're adding one all the time. You know, we could probably add more, but you know, we're kind of maxed out right now. You know, there is no shortage of rugby players, no shortage of rugby fans, no shortage of kids and families involved in the game. Everywhere you go. I talked to Chris Reed, a player used for Rugby Trust. He said they can't get those starter kits out fast enough. Those little flag rugby starter kits at $90 a shot. He said they're shipping them out a dozen at a time. You know, so, but. It's been deserved at the top, and I'm not as clued in as Steve is, but the people at the bottom need to be looked after because that's the future of rugby, right? That is rugby.
Yeah.
You know, that's the future.
So, and it's basically you're saying the same thing that Bruce was saying.
Yeah.
You got to empower the grassroots folks and the people that are doing the volunteer work. So Bruce, with 1 minute and 30 seconds left in our show, and these shows fly by, you're now the CEO of USA Rugby. Now you're not the chairman, you're the CEO. Give me something. What are you going to do day one?
I'm going to empower the American people to run their organizations. And while we have the Champagne Socialist, I am Dennis Kucinich, and I'm Ron Paul. And I will...
and he is, incidentally.
And we will empower the rugby public to do what they think is best. In their, every geographic region is different. Everyone has a different circumstance. What works in California doesn't necessarily work in New York. What works in Minnesota doesn't necessarily work in Texas.
Do you think you should break apart USA Rugby and make it regional authorities?
No, USA Rugby should be focusing 100% on national teams, men and women, under 20s and sevens national teams, men and women. That's what they should be doing. Everything else should be taken and decentralized to a group of people who we can trust. We know we can trust them, the 43 members of Congress, or 46, whatever they are. Those are the people that we need to run our game. They are the people, they're you and me and everybody else. That's the people who made this game great, and let's go for it.
All right, well said, Bruce. Gentlemen, thank you. This is I could sit here for another 3 hours, I'll be honest with you, talking rugby with you. Mr. James Kennedy of the Murphy Kennedy Group, Mr. Steve Lewis, the elite sevens coach and former head of director, COO of Pro Rugby, and our member of Congress on USA Rugby's board. He's also heading the Bulldogs and stuff. He's got a whole bunch of stuff going on. And Mr. Bruce McLean, the legend, Mr. Bruce McLean, who is now at Iona College. I want to thank you guys and just leave you with this one thought or one question. Are you a tuba? Matt McCarthy, Studio 34, Fantasy Sports Network, for Rugby Wrap-Up, on behalf of these gentlemen, signing off.